Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Off and rolling, hump day, Wednesday, September 10th, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer until Connor gets back. That would be George Ruggiero at KingGeorge94 on X. King George, King, how we doing, brother?
We're doing good. Getting into, as you said yesterday, what'd you call it yesterday?
I don't know.
The hero shift?
Oh, the hero shift? Yeah.
I'm only on hour three.
Okay.
So we're getting
that's
there.
Not
we're
a hero
working.
Shift. That's not a
nah,
hero shift, brother.
Not there yet.
That's not what that is. Can't give yourself too much credit. Know what I learned today?
What'd you learn today?
I need to get off social media and stay off social media every once in a while.
Okay.
Have you seen
a little detox?
So I scroll TikTok every once in a while.
Sure.
Like the best of them. Everybody does.
Yeah,
that.
Why not?
And I came across a trend that's going around right now. And I'm not sure if you have seen this trend. It's called the perpetual stew trend.
I have seen a
Are
perpetual.
Are you familiar with this?
I have seen a perpetual stew,
How
yes.
disgusting is it? So for those that don't know, people right now are taking their hot pots and they're basically making a stew that they keep stewing for eternity, for a long time. Now, there's some people that have had to clean out their hot pots and redo it because it got nasty. Of course it not got nasty.
Yeah.
But I've seen some that have been in there for 90 days. I've seen some that have been there for a year and a half. That can't be sanitary. That cannot be good at all for the people that are ingesting this stew that they're making. And they just put in new ingredients every night and eat their stew. This is why I need to stay away from social media, because I should not be in that dark corner of the internet. That's a disgusting place to be. But you've seen the trend.
Yes, no. So I have seen people who are like trying in earnest, like, you know, this is like a very like ancient, you know, type of thing.
Yes, that, like there's I've seen people have like
try to do it as
people that
honestly
know what they're doing. There's like a 45-year-old perpetual stew that people that's gone viral.
Sure, I've
like,
seen
I've
that.
Seen that.
I have seen way beyond that.
Yeah.
Like I've seen stuff where people are just like they will take the comments, the top comment,
and just throw whatever,
and just throw whatever's in there,
and then they'll eat it.
But thing is, you know good and well, you know the people of the internet are going to all just like thumbs up the most disgusting
thing
possible.
The nastiest thing is like, I saw someone redo it, pour it out and start anew. And the reason they did it is because basically their stew overnight, based on what they put in, turned into like a black sludge.
Yeah, that's hey.
They
boss.
Were about to go eat it until they realized, okay, I probably should not ingest this, put this in my body.
Like, that's exactly what happens when you let other people tell you. Like, I'm sure like the last thing they put in there said, hey, boss man, throw in a package of Peeps or something.
Like,
of course that's going to melt down and just be disgusting. What do you mean?
Yeah. So, saw that today. Wish I didn't see that today, but I saw that today. Now, what you will see today is George and I take you through 3 hours of compelling sports talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We have overreaction and not an overreaction to start the show. And we have a lot of different things to discuss, some in the NFL, some in college football. I'll give you my NFL power rankings. We're starting that up this week, post week one power rankings. Every single Wednesday at 4:30, thereabouts, I'll give you my power rankings, my top five, then we'll react to it. It's the Gabe Kuhn Show, NFL power rankings, post week one at 4:30. 5 o'clock, David Cobble joined the show right after him. Trip around the NFL. Colton Denning at 6 o'clock to talk some college football. Then we will blitz around 6:30. And that will be Brad Carson. Brad Carson will be taking over for George at 6:30 for the Blitz. And then we'll rewind. That is the show for you. But let's go ahead and open it up. Overreaction, not an overreaction. What we got today, George?
Leading off, we've got some holdover from yesterday. And, of course, on Monday, the Bears lost to the Vikings 27-24 in the opener of Monday Night Football. Caleb Williams finished his night 21-35, 210, a touchdown, and a rushing touchdown. However, he had consistent problems playing on time and on schedule, as we talked about yesterday. Caleb Williams doesn't have it.
I'm going to go with an overreaction. As of right now, the poor guy doesn't have what he needs to have within a Ben Johnson offense. Ben Johnson was brought in there to maximize Caleb Williams' skill set. And most of Caleb Williams' great play came off of unscheduled, untimed, great sort of improvisation. Like, that's what he did really well on Monday night. But when you ask him to really run an offense, to focus in, to create consistent chunk plays, to create consistent the consistent ability to move the chains, he has struggles with that. We highlighted that yesterday. The one thing that is constant about him is his unpredictability. As soon as he becomes more predictable, we can get there with him. Now, obviously, he's had some issues with overshooting his receivers, doing things like that. But I think that also has to do with honing in his game and understanding how to deliver a ball on time and on schedule. But listen, the truth of the matter is everything that we liked about him coming out of USC is still there. It hasn't left. It's not like he had some Achilles or ACL injury that got rid of his legs. It's not like he's had to have a Tommy John surgery where his arm is half of what it used to be. He still has the physical attributes and the ability to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league. He's just not there yet from a mental standpoint. I don't want to sit here and act like I know for a fact we're going to end up with Caleb Williams as a top 10 or top 5 quarterback, because I don't know that yet. That's about his mental makeup and how Ben Johnson is coaching him behind the scenes. I'd imagine he's coaching him really hard. But to sit here after one game with Ben Johnson and tell you he's never going to be what we thought he was going to be, I think that would be foolhardy. I think that would be wrong. So to say he doesn't have it, I think that's a dramatic overreaction.
Yeah, going back to, and we even said this yesterday, everything that we liked, everything that makes him the quarterback that he is, doesn't just go away overnight.
Yes.
And also, this is his first game with a new head coach, new offensive play caller, new offense,
and
new offensive line.
And by the way, I have been watching back some of the film of how the offensive line played, because they redid it. Their tackles. Darnell Wright got that holding call that I didn't like. But the interior is completely remade. You have Drew Dahlman from the Falcons at center. You have Jonah Jackson from the Rams at right guard. And then you have the perpetual all-pro stud. I don't know how much longer he's going to play, but he's an absolute baller in Joe Tooney. So
right.
I watched a lot of the film back because everyone is posting all 22s. By the way, I have a little bit of a soapbox moment here.
Okay.
Way too many people at big networks posting their all 22s with captions that make no sense and they don't know what they're watching, but that's a different story for a different day.
Yeah.
But I was watching the interior of that offensive line. They were lost. There was way too much pressure on Caleb Williams with all of the money they invested in that offensive line. I know Jeffrey Wright has mentioned it on multiple occasions, but it was a 44% pressure rate. That led the NFL. That's not good. And you can sit here all you want and say Brian Flores is he creates confusing looks, he mugs up linebackers, he shows cover zero, and then he drops it out, and you don't know what to do with your eyes. But at the same time, I've seen people get over on Brian Flores before. The Lions last year against the Vikings in the season finale absolutely tore that defense apart limb from limb, and you know who the defensive coordinator then was? Brian Flores. I think that offensive line, Ben Johnson, that offensive staff wasn't quite ready for what was going to be thrown at them, and they should have been more prepared. And I think that's also part of the reason you saw some of the issues from Caleb Williams.
Absolutely. And like you just said, one of the biggest things as well, and we hear other players across the league talk about it, especially in day after looking at film. A huge portion, especially not just in run pro, but especially in pass pro, is communication.
Yes.
And it's communicating between backs and interior linemen and exterior linemen and receivers and tight ends. They all have to be on the same page to keep that pocket clean. And what did Caleb Williams not have over 40% of the time? We're talking... 4 out of every 10 dropbacks.
If you want him to play better on schedule, he has to be able to sit back in the pocket and analyze. And he didn't really have the opportunity to do that on a consistent basis. That's the truth of it.
Think about it. If we're just putting it down, boiling it down to just math, he had 35 dropbacks, right? So if we just break that down into tens, three tens, 4 out of each 10.
Yes.
He is under duress.
Real duress.
Not like a little...
within the first 3 seconds of the play, he's got somebody in his face.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was one clip, and you can go to my social media and check it out. I G underscore Coon 71, KUHN. Yeah, for sure. Where there's basically a mugged up linebacker look. You have two linebackers in the A gaps. It's a 4-down front. It's a third down. And they let the right linebacker who's in the A-gap, Ivan Pace Jr., who is a known rusher for the most part, he blitzes constantly for that Brian Flores defense.
He's great.
They literally let him run directly through the A-gap and get in Caleb Williams' face. Now, know what was funny about that play is that was when Caleb Williams threw that, you know, hospital ball to DJ Moore across the middle that was perfectly placed. And obviously DJ Moore got smacked in the mouth and he had to leave the game for a couple of plays. But it was a really good play by Caleb Williams, even though he had a free A-gap rusher.
Just
so, like, you see the semblance of what could be. And the question just becomes, how soon can he get there? Because we know that as much as we talk about development slowing down with quarterbacks at the college level and the NFL level, it's the developmental runway. They don't let you go 3-4 years not being the player that they expect you to be. So he's going to have to get there sooner rather than later, but I also think he needs favors done for himself. You know, his team, Ben Johnson, that offensive line, they have to take it upon themselves to give him the best opportunity to be the player that we thought he was going to be.
Everyone needs to grow. Yeah. Also, on Monday night, J.J. McCarthy mounted a fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah, he did. I've heard about it a million times at this point.
He himself accounted for 2 passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown all in the fourth quarter. J.J. McCarthy has it. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Oh, God, an overreaction. Doesn't mean he's going to end up being bad. No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is you can't erase the first 3 quarters I watched on Monday night. I find it insane that it seems like everybody is erasing the first 3 quarters of that Monday night game. I pretty much laid it out for you who J.J. McCarthy is as a player, and this dates back to him at Michigan. He didn't have to do all that much at Michigan because they had a strong run game. And painted it for you. First half, 35 rushing yards. 4 of the 5 drives that the Vikings had were 3 and outs. Second half, 85 yards rushing. Guess what?
Looked pretty good.
Two passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. But, like, in the end of the day, he threw for 143 yards. He didn't get going at all until the fourth quarter, until that running game did something. I'm not saying he doesn't have it, but conversely, I'm not saying he has it. You can't just sit here after 1 quarter of decent play and say that, against the Bears, no less, that he's somehow going to be a top 10 quarterback. I think he has a great situation. You have Justin Jefferson. You have a good tight end in T.J. Hockenson. You have some really good weapons. Once they get healthy, it'll be even better.
Or
unsuspended, like Jordan Addison. Yeah, I think that'll be even better. His offensive line is solid.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing that he has at his disposal is Kevin O'Connell. Kevin O'Connell obviously came from that Rams, Sean McVay system, but he does it his own way. And he keeps it consistent for a quarterback. He knows how to coach them up. See Sam Darnold winning 14 games and being in the MVP race last year. So I think he's got the ability to be a good quarterback in this league. But I'm not going to sit here after Monday Night Football like it feels like a lot of people have already and say, oh, my gosh, he's already what we want him to be. He's where we need him to be. He's going to be a great quarterback. They're going to win 10 to 12 games. I'm not there with J.J. McCarthy at all. I feel like Monday night, for the most part, I feel like he got praised for doing sort of bare minimum franchise quarterback things.
Yeah.
And it bothers me that that's the case, but it does show you how high a regard we hold winning and we hold crunch time quarterbacking. I don't think it's a surprise to me, but he kind of did bare minimum things to show that he was a franchise quarterback, to show that he deserved to be the starter for the Vikings, and everyone is going overboard with their praise of him.
Yeah, completely agree. Covered pretty much anything I would have been able to add there. But moving on.
Of course.
To college football, of course. It's Total Football every weekend going forward. Week 3 of the college football season is on the way. A big matchup that will end up affecting our listening audience and me will be in Oxford, a matchup of undefeated Arkansas and undefeated Ole Miss. Ole Miss is favored by a touchdown in this game. Ole Miss will handle business this weekend. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Okay. Handling business to me is winning the game. I don't care about a cover. I think that's how Ole Miss fans feel right now. They have not been impressed with Austin Simmons through 2 weeks. He hasn't really had a full command of the offense. Running game's been really good. Kewan Lacy has looked really solid. Two 100-yard games in 2 games. So I'm going to say they will win the game, not an overreaction. I think that they will handle business. And I think what you see, especially with teams that are not as good as you, that are seemingly inferior, they're going to run a lot more zone in their secondary. And with a young quarterback in his first year starting like Austin Simmons, that can be confusing. You can trap him. You can play with his eyes a little bit more when you get into those zone coverages. But you know who the team is so far through 2 games that has run the second most man concepts on the defensive side of the ball in the SEC? That would be Arkansas. Over 50% of the time, nearly over 60% of the time, they run man concepts. And what I'm betting on going into this weekend in that game is that the Ole Miss wide receiving core, the Ole Miss tight ends, can win one-on-one matchups against that Arkansas secondary. Now, Arkansas has tried to replenish that secondary. They hit the transfer portal hard. They have some better players than they've had the past couple of years. But I just feel like if you're going to play more man against the Lane Kiffin offense, you're kind of asking for trouble. Maybe they adjust that. Maybe they play more zone. But they have shown through 2 weeks they're going to try to man up and they're going to try to win one-on-one battles. And I'm betting on Ole Miss's pass catchers, Ole Miss's skill players to win those one-on-ones more often than not.
Yeah, and this one kind of in a way goes back to last season, but for a different program and a different team. And to me, just one of the more impressive players that I've seen in watching the first couple games here for Ole Miss is transfer receiver Harrison Wallace.
Yes.
The third.
Absolutely.
Who threw these, 2 games, 9 catches for 247 yards.
Correct.
And a touchdown. Do you know where he played last year?
Penn State.
What was one of Penn State fans and, you know, Penn State's big...
pass catchers, didn't have them. Only Tyler Warren was doing anything. That's what they thought.
Hey, maybe, just maybe. You might have had someone pretty, pretty good there in Trey Wallace.
And you could let me know if there's any, like, health issues with these guys, but even outside of Harrison Wallace, who's been phenomenal.
Yeah. Deuce has looked
good. Deuce Alexander's a good player. Dazon Stribling is a good player.
He was awesome at Oklahoma State.
Caden Lee, I don't know his, like, what's up with him from a health standpoint. He caught for 874 yards last year on 57 catches. You almost feel like he's going to come through at some point.
I
think the run game has been good enough to, even against an SEC front seven, you know, get some tough yardage with Kawan Lacy. But, like, I just feel like Ole Miss has not been able to capitalize or show how much talent they have in that wide receiver room, in their pass catchers, through 2 weeks. And I feel like this week could be the breakout.
I tend to agree. I also don't want to be dismissive I think Talon Green has been very, he's been great, very good for Arkansas.
Alabama A&M and Arkansas State, it's just hard for me to get a real feel.
Yeah, I recognize that. I recognize that it's been against bad opposition. But the talent is there. The talent was there last year with him. He is a supreme athlete.
Listen, 561 yards, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 205.5 quarterback rating. And then he has 18 carries for 192 yards and a rushing touchdown so far this year against bad competition. Like he is,
there have been some players that can't do that, though.
Yes, 100%. But he's one of those guys that I have become used to this, and I'm sure Arkansas fans have become used to this. You get into SEC play, you start playing better competition, and he feels a little bit pressed. Now, I know he's older, more experienced, but he tends to press a little bit, and he will make mistakes with the football. In fact, he made mistakes with the football against Arkansas State after that Alabama A&M game. He threw two picks. Threw two picks against Arkansas State. Did it matter? No. They won 56-14, and he was still able to make up for those mistakes.
Sure.
But, like, if you throw those two picks against Ole Miss, if you force the ball into harm's way against Ole Miss, it's going to be really, really hard to win a ball game against that particular team. Now, conversely, on the other side, Austin Simmons has to take care of the football. He has not 100%. Been good with it so far in that Kentucky game. Listen, you know I have bought
Austin Simmons
stock. And it was mostly because, okay, Lane Kiffin didn't recruit over him, and I looked at the damn wide receiver room, and I go, it's loaded.
Oh, they're
ready to roll.
Slinging this thing all
they're
over
ready
the place.
To roll. That was my thought process. But so far, he just has looked a little bit out of sorts. Against Kentucky, two picks, no passing touchdowns. I feel like if there was a week to really hit the film room, if there was a week to really show, okay, I'm not what I've shown on film the first 2 weeks, it is this week, right now, at home, SEC, Arkansas flying high. I need to see it from Austin Simmons this week.
Plenty of discussion this week about the open letter to Florida fans that Athletic Director Scott Strickland wrote following Florida's loss to USF. He wrote that he'd stick with Billy Napier and that he had confidence he would be able to finish this year strong. It's a nice thing just to say that, but Billy Napier will be fired. He is fired. It's just a matter of when. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Not an overreaction. Do you get any other sense?
No.
I mean,
not even a little bit.
Listen, I think there's other coaches around the SEC that have talked nice of him, namely Brian Kelly at LSU. Wonder why Brian Kelly's talking nice about him. It's almost like they lost 27-16 to them last year when DJ Lagway was forced into action. He's gotten some nice sort of votes of confidence from other SEC coaches as well. And I don't think everything Billy Napier has touched at Florida has been horrid. But for the most part, there's just a lack of consistency, a lack of discipline that showed up very heavily in that South Florida game. And listen, when you get a vote of confidence week two of a season, when you get a vote of confidence in general, this is the second one, by the way. This was postseason after the year last year. Scott Strickland put out a similar statement to Florida fans saying they're sticking with Billy Napier. And then week two of this season, he has to do it again. I don't know if this is a three strikes and you're out situation, but two votes of confidence in less than a calendar year makes me feel like the decision is just about made. They're going to give him an opportunity to save himself, though. And here's the thing. Here is the thing. He can, but he won't. He can.
Yeah, that's the kicker. You
but
know.
He won't. Have you seen their schedule the rest of the year? And namely, let's just go the next four games. Next four games. He is 20-20 as the Florida head coach.
Yep.
This is what he has the next four games. At LSU. At Miami. And we remember the Miami game from last year. I know it was Cam Ward, but Carson Beck's looked okay.
He's looked decent. He's looked pretty good.
At home versus Texas.
Yikes.
And then on the road, and we'll see more about this team as we get into this weekend, week three. They're playing at Notre Dame.
A&M.
But A&M is the fourth of four games in that stretch. And here's the other part of it that really gives me just exceptional pause. The other ranked games they have as of right now are Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Florida State. But the two easy games, right? And I'm putting those in air quotes.
Yeah.
Mississippi State just beat the number 12 team in the country.
Didn't look half bad.
And at Kentucky, who just gave Ole Miss all they could handle on the at home, basically.
Which, so, you know, Kentucky does.
I don't even know if, like,
week in and
are
week
we
out.
Are we sitting here and saying, oh, Florida, even with DJ Lagway going on the road against Kentucky, that's an easy dub? No, I'm not doing that.
Kentucky plays tough.
They're more than capable.
Everybody. That's their brand. That's what they do.
Yes, they're more than capable. They're still going to be a bad team when it's all said and done. I don't know if they'll have a winning record. I would bet against them having a winning record, but they're still going to be capable at home against the Florida team.
Likely
a night game. We'll see how that works. But I feel like this is my feel.
Yeah.
Three games in four in the next four games on the road, all against ranked opponents.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he'll be fired by the time we get to November. That's sort of my cutoff date. Because I don't see it going all that well for him on the road against LSU this weekend. I don't see it going well for him on the road against Miami next weekend. 2 weeks after that, he gets the bye, and then he'll have Texas. Don't see that going well. We'll see what happens with Arch Manning. If he can get that shoulder all rehabbed and he's ready to go, maybe that could be something we talk about when we get to that game. But I think Texas is supremely talented still, even without Arch Manning at quarterback. And then we'll see what happens in that A&M game. But this four-game stretch, to me, I'm looking at the very best being 1-3. I think the likely outcome's 0-4 based on where they're at as a team after that South Florida game, the lack of confidence they have in their coach. I just feel like we'll get to November and they're gonna be starting their full search. That's what common sense and vibes tell me.
Can I hop on your soapbox real quick from yesterday? Because we talked about this yesterday. Because now it's not just fans. Now it's not just people throwing around these potential coaching hires. Did you see this was 10 hours ago on ESPN from their college writing staff. And it's all about the hot seat and cooling seats. Of course, the hottest seat, the microwaved hot seat, is, of course, for Billy Napier at Florida. Whole tab, who are coaching candidates to watch? First four from Schlabach. Of course, Dan Lanning comes up. But, he of course says, I'm guessing it would be very difficult to lure him from Nike and Phil Knight.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
Okay. Next up, Lane Kiffin. Next up, which we both say, okay, you know what, maybe, Jed Fish. Okay, whatever.
Fine.
I'm fine there. Do you know what the next one up for Mark? Eli Drinkwitz.
He's done
pretty good at Missouri.
I will say Florida does have a bigger bankroll than Mizzou.
True.
But Mizzou has been recruiting their ass off, so there must be some type of bankroll in that program.
Okay,
right,
but don't worry. That's not all we've got.
That one actually seems a little bit better.
That's better.
Remember, it was Marcus Freeman, too, another name.
But the fact that that's fourth on the list.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, Rittenberg, of course, has his take on this as well.
Okay.
Kiffin and Drinkwitz are 1-2.
Okay.
And then, here we get a little bit more realistic until we get to the last one. So we go Golish. Okay.
That's the name that we both talked about yesterday.
Lance Leipold.
Okay.
Okay. That's fine.
I have questions about Lance Leipold with, like, a real bankroll and how well he recruit, but that's a different story.
John Sumrall.
Okay.
Okay.
I think that would be a really good hire, but also, if you're Florida,
you're
a Florida fan, do you want to dive back into the group of six?
Yeah,
that's tough.
This one is hilarious to me. This one is so funny.
Please drop it. I'm ready.
Old boy Dan coming back. Dan Mullen.
I'm at a loss for words. I really am. And here's the thing. I thought Dan Mullen, when he got fired, it was just like, why do that? He's a good coach.
Yeah.
He promised clearly more than he should have to Emory Jones. We know that.
Oh, yeah.
That was the thing that caused him to be
well
out.
Documented.
But he was clearly, since Urban Meyer, the best coach they've had on campus. And it's not even particularly close.
Not even a little bit.
So.
And obviously, I adore Dan Mullen.
It's and with that, kind of less about Dan Mullen and his fit and more about what happened in the past. Would Dan Mullen want to hop back into that situation knowing what happened to him and how he was treated on the way out last time?
That's what I'm saying. Not like the bridge was burnt or anything.
Yeah, it feels like that bridge is burnt. That's an insane thing to me. That's an insane thing to me.
That is
I could see, crazy. Though, I mean, with the way UNLV's plan just beat UCLA.
Yeah.
3-0. Look like they're still in the group of six college football playoff conversation. If he has a really good year, gets about 9 or 10 wins, I could see him getting back to an SEC job. I just think Florida.
That
right? is. He's been there, done that before, and he got treated like absolute garbage on the way out. And also, I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
Fan base at Florida, do you think they're – like, how do they feel about Dan? I don't know if that would be something that went over well.
I don't think they've got the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, they wanted better.
Yep.
Because in the end of the day, I think that firing was made in part, yes, on-field performance, but also in part, fan base had grown tired of Dan and just felt like it had run its course. I don't know if you would have a bunch of – I don't know if you'd have a bunch of Florida fans ready to hop back into that relationship.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But speaking of UCLA, bringing UCLA up – Joey Aguilar's father to Pete Nakos at On3 on the UCLA-Tennessee quarterback swap, quote, "We don't have any problems with Nico. If anything, it's thank you. I think it's clear who won the trade. Look at the fans and the stats.
That's sad.
Everything happens for a reason."
Come on, Joey Aguilar's dad. Yeah.
Tennessee won the quarterback trade. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
You didn't have to do Nico like that, did you? That's not an overreaction in the slightest. Here are the stats so far this year, just to highlight it for you. I don't really have to elaborate too much on why Tennessee has won this quarterback trade. But so far, Nico, 0-for, has not won a game, 0-2. 40-for-63, that's 63% completion percentage. 391 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And he has 106 yards rushing and a touchdown rushing as well. But Joey Aguilar, 39-for-59. 66% completion percentage, 535 yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That's
pretty good.
It's pretty well stated who won. Now, I also am of the opinion, when speaking on both of these quarterbacks, I think if Nico would have stayed at Tennessee, he probably would have similar, if not more, success through these first two games than Joey Aguilar. Maybe Tennessee fans don't want to hear that. Maybe he'd put the ball in harm's way a little bit more than Joey Aguilar. Although Joey Aguilar, let's not act like at App State, he was like very, you know, he cared for the ball that much. He threw double-digit picks his last 2 years at App State.
He's a gunslinger.
But, you know, what this does for me is it just takes me back to when all this happened. And it really is sad that Nico has people in his life that kind of force this decision on him and put him in this situation. Because Nico, to me, is one of those guys that you look at from a physical attribute standpoint and say, NFL, like 6'6", 225 pounds, cannon for an arm, needs to hone it in, needs someone to help him with that. He can run really fast, super athletic. And he ends up at UCLA in a situation in the Big Ten where, one, he doesn't have a very good coaching staff or a program that cares all that much about football at this moment. And two, you completely spurned and burned a bridge with, you could look at that Tennessee offense and say, okay, it doesn't prepare you for the NFL. Not a very good track record for Josh Heupel quarterbacks in the National Football League. Hendon Hooker didn't work out. Maybe that had to do with the ACL. Maybe it didn't, whatever. But I can tell you this, you would have gotten way more looks had you stayed in that Tennessee program and just learned under Heupel. Regardless of what you thought about the offense, regardless of what you thought about the money, it seems like he's making the same amount of money at UCLA that he would have made at Tennessee. It just feels like it was a horrible, horrible, horrible decision. And the more I look back on it, I felt bad for him in the moment because it felt like he was getting bad advice. But now you look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a nightmarish turnout for this quarterback swap, no doubt. All right, now we need to go ahead and get to my post week 1 NFL power rankings for the Gabe Kuhn Show. We'll do that next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Week one of the NFL season is behind us. Week two will get started tomorrow night, Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime, Commanders at Packers. But before we get there, every single Wednesday, we're going to do my Gabe Kuhn Show NFL Power Rankings. We're just going to do the top five. Don't need to go 32-1. But let's go ahead and start at number five. I'm going to go, and this may surprise some folks, but they beat a team that I would presume at this point I would have had in the top five. I'm going to go with the Chargers. Chargers. They beat the Chiefs on Friday night in Brazil in Sao Paulo. And I guess the question for me is, are we seeing a true breakthrough from Justin Herbert? That game he played was as clean a game as I have ever seen from him. And that's saying something because he has played some wonderful, magnificent ball through his career. But they won 27-21 in his final stat line. Read 25 for 34, 318, three touchdowns, and he was able to run the ball for 32 yards, including that 19-yard scramble, to end the game. That was a situation where he may throw an incompletion in the pass, let the Chiefs get the ball back, but he was able to go convert, able to win that ball game with his legs and with the ball in their hands. And I think that's how you have to beat the Chiefs. Chiefs are so good in one-score games. They were 11-0 last year in one-score games. They lost their first one-score game this year to the Chargers. You have to end with the ball in your hands and on a knee when you're playing the Chiefs, and they were able to do that. But week one does make me feel like we saw somewhat of a breakthrough from Justin Herbert. I know it's a small sample size, but it looked different. And if we are seeing Justin Herbert's breakthrough, that team has the goods. They have a physical sort of presence. Their offensive line, pretty solid. Joe Alt had to move to left tackle because they had an injury to start the year to their all-pro left tackle, and he was phenomenal. Did a really good job manning that left tackle position. I think it's a run game that has a chance to pop with Omarion Hampton now in as their first-round pick. The wide receiver room, maybe you want to see a little bit more, but I think they have enough. Ladd McConkey, very good. And then Keenan Allen back, caught a touchdown in the opening game. It looks like he at least has a little bit more to give to that Chargers team that he's very familiar with. And defensively, I don't think they have, like, those star pieces that they've had in the past. They still have Khalil Mack, but it's a different Khalil Mack. But they had Khalil Mack in his prime, Joey Bosa in his prime, Derwin James in his prime. They had all these really good players. Now I don't necessarily think they have all that. Derwin James is still a damn good safety. But Jesse Minter, their defensive coordinator, who was at Michigan with Jim Harbaugh before he took the Chargers gig, he's just a really good defensive coordinator that doesn't get talked about enough. He led that group to a top 12 finish in total defense last year. He relies on a very much a defensive, like a team defensive style instead of, okay, let's highlight these great edge rushers we have, these great linebackers we have, these great safety secondary members we have. But they play damn solid physical football. And I think that can carry them throughout the season. I'm going to put the Ravens, even though they lost week one. I thought it was fluky. I've mentioned that to you. A tip ball into Keon Coleman's hands. And then a fumble by Derrick Henry when he usually closes games. He helped someone get back into the game. It's not something we've become accustomed to in this day and age. But it's the most talented team, most talented roster, in my opinion. In the NFL outside of Philadelphia. But I would have them higher. Probably one or two if they didn't blow that game week one. Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, I know we talk about how good they are, but I don't think people grasp how good they are. Like, to me, it's one of the most dynamic, impressive 1-2 backfield punches we have seen in NFL history. It is so hard as a defensive player or a defensive schemer to deal with that, because you're going to have the natural in between the tackle, off tackle runs from Derrick Henry, whether that be a nice outside zone scheme, inside zone scheme, or a power. But you also have Lamar Jackson on any given play. If a defensive end bites too much on a Derrick Henry play, Derrick Henry run up the middle, which you should, because it's Derrick Henry, you have to have all bodies on him because he's 6'4", 250 pounds. He can pull it on any given play. Lamar Jackson, we know how good he is with his legs. He's so fast. He's so quick. He barely gets touched. He's very good at getting down before taking hits. So I look at that team. very good offensively. Defensively, need to see them step it up, man. They have the pieces. Justin Madubuike, or Nnamdi Madubuike, changed his name in the offseason. One of the best D tackles in the game. I think their linebacking core, led by Roquan Smith, phenomenal. Secondary was 24th in the league last year in pass yards allowed. But I thought, hey, you added Jaire Alexander. If he's healthy, you feel okay. You have Kyle Hamilton, clearly the best safety, free safety in the National Football League. And then you have Malachi Starks, who I thought, after a first-round pick, would step into a role. I think it'll be a bit of a learning curve, but game one, allowing 394 yards passing and 250 yards passing in the fourth quarter to Josh Allen made me rethink that to a certain extent. But the Ravens are going to be a good team, and I'd imagine they'd be in this top five power ranking for the Gabe Kuhn Show just about the entire season. I'm going to go with the Packers. Packers hammered the presumed number one seed in the NFC and the number one seed from last year in the Detroit Lions. They added Micah Parsons, and contrary to popular belief, he played really well. He played less than he played 40% of the snaps, but he had I think 22% win rate on pass rushes against Penei Sewell, who is a perennial All-Pro. If you know anything about pass rush win rate, 22% against that guy, very, very good. And he had a sack, and he was all over the place when he was on the field. So I think he's going to add a lot. I think they added real talent to their wide receiver room. They still, you know, they need to get healthy. Dontavion Wicks needs to come back. They need to find some understanding of who's going to be their top target. But they've sort of done it by committee the past couple of years with Jordan Love. But I'm a big believer in Matthew Golden and what he's going to provide after being drafted in the first round out of Texas this year. I can see the vision for that wide receiver room. Running back room, Josh Jacobs, that offensive line, they'll handle business. And they're coming off a season where they were top 10 in rush defense. And, oh, yeah, they were top 10 in pass defense a year ago. So I think the defense will take care of itself as well. They have more than enough talent on that side of the ball. And they added Micah Parsons. Jeff Hafley, their defensive coordinator, of course, was the former coach at BC, Boston College. He came over because he was tired of being a head coach at a program that didn't want to give him the amount of money that he could compete with in the ACC. So I'm a big believer in this Packers team. I think I called it before the year. I think they're going to win the NFC North, and week one definitely made me feel a lot more strong about my prediction. Bills. Josh Allen threw for 250 in the fourth quarter of the Bills' week one win versus the Ravens. He finished with 394 pass yards. Keon Coleman, not overly fast, but damn is he strong, and he's a really damn good route runner. I think he showed a real target-eating ability for Josh Allen, and Josh Allen didn't have that last year in his rookie season because we know that Khalil Shakir's not going to do that. They tried to bring in Amari Cooper. He couldn't do that late in his career, but 12 targets, 8 catches, 112 yards, and a touchdown. I think that they finally found their wide receiver. James Cook has do-it-all ability at the running back position. He led all running backs last year in rushing touchdowns and touchdowns in general. I think he can do that again this year. He's really, I would say dynamic, but he just is in the right places at the right times, and him and Josh Allen have a nice little brain trust going on. Defense gives me pause, but Josh Allen, the former MVP, he makes me press play. Eagles, I don't really need to explain this one very much, but I'm going to do it anyway. Reigning Super Bowl champs, they get a week one win against the Dallas Cowboys. The reigning Super Bowl MVP, Jalen Hurts, just does nothing but win. Reigning Offensive Player of the Year, Saquon Barkley, is a home run threat from anywhere on the field. They have good wide receiver room, even though I think they need to use it a little bit more. Right? Yeah, Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown had one target in that game against the Cowboys. I'd imagine you get into the film room and say, all right, Jalen, all right, A.J., let's figure this out. We need to have more than one target for one catch and 8 yards going forward. I think the defense is filled out really well. Jalen Carter is the disruptor. Zach Bond is the heartbeat at the linebacker position. Quietly somehow finished top five in Defensive Player of the Year voting last year, nearly led the league in tackles a year ago. Secondary is quietly good. Quinyon Mitchell in year two, very good corner. Cooper DeJean, who was kind of the hero of the Super Bowl last year. Reed Blankenship's a good player. And a couple of other additions defensively should give other teams pause. One being Jihad Campbell, who they traded up one spot for out of Alabama. He's sort of a do-it-all linebacker. You can line him up on the edge. He can do some things. You can make him an off-ball linebacker, put him into coverage. He seems relatively comfortable with that. I'd keep him more in coverage in the flat than, you know, covering tight ends, good tight ends down the middle of the field. But that's a different story for a different day. I think he's a good playmaker, good chess piece. And then in the past week, right after that week one win, they signed Za'Darius Smith. Za'Darius Smith, he's 31 years of age, yes, and he may be on his final leg, but he had 9 sacks for the Lions last year. They need some help off the edge. I think he can provide that. So I have the Eagles at number one. So in review, number one, Eagles, 2 Bills, 3 Packers, 4 Ravens, 5 Chargers. George Ruggiero, do your worst. What you got? What do you think? You have complaints?
I don't. I really don't. Maybe the only one that, you know, and we acknowledge it, the one that a lot of people have had some issue with is the Ravens being as high as they are in a lot of people's power rankings, especially coming off a loss where, yes, fluky, which I think we both recognize as well. We can look at it as a bit of a breakdown in that fourth quarter. But at the same time, it's also Josh Allen doing Josh Allen things.
Yes.
Like, he's the MVP for a reason. He's one of the most clutch players in the NFL. He on his own is just an absolute freak. I don't have that many notes other than that. I really like the pick of the Chargers. The Chargers pick there, I think they're more well-rounded
what,
this year.
And what stuck out to me about that game is just the ability the Chiefs have had in the past couple of years to finish and be able to win one-score games when it looks like their back's against the wall. And the Chargers, conversely, being the team who, back against the wall, one-score game, always fails. Always fails. They came through, the Chiefs flailed around. Like, I know it's 1 week worth of NFL football, but that meant something to me because it broke a trend that has always been there. That has always been there. I think the stat was, going into that game, Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes had played 8 times. Patrick Mahomes was 7-1 in those games, and 6 of those games were decided by one score. So, like, Justin Herbert took that one game and flipped the script and did to Patrick Mahomes what Patrick Mahomes has done to him his entire career. So, like, that in itself, that storyline means something to me and why I need to give them at least a head nod going into week 2.
Absolutely, and I think one of the biggest things you pointed out was the injury to Rashawn Slater.
Yep.
And him not being there. And then they just take, oh, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, our right tackle, he can play left tackle too.
Hey, by the way, the guy that was a top 5 pick, we'll just slide him on over and it'll look like we didn't miss a beat.
He looked like the all-pro that Rashawn Slater is. I hate to say it in week 1. He looked like it. He looked the part.
I'm just saying. Imagine both.
Yeah, I know.
I know that's the vision.
That's what happened last year. That's what should happen. But Joe Alton himself.
Stud.
Hell of a left tackle. And what was actually nice for them is this went under the radar, and I'm diving into the weeds. Here. Trey Pipkins was the starting right tackle before Joe Alt got there. They signed him as a backup to a 3-year, $21 million deal. So, like, they had a backup plan in case Rashawn Slater had health issues. So now you can just – it was kind of a – obviously, it's not as good as Rashawn Slater at left tackle, Joe Alt at right tackle.
Sure.
But you had a guy who started over 20 games in the NFL who you're paying $7 million a year to step right in. So, like, they didn't miss that much of a beat, even though it could have been a lot worse when you saw the Rashawn Slater news. You thought, oh, gosh, missing him for the entire year? Another patellar tendon problem? Like, you thought that could be death to their offensive line, their running game, that it would really hurt Justin Herbert staying upright in the pocket. But you're able to kick Joe Alt over left tackle. He plays well. Now you have your high-paid backup stepping in at right tackle. You don't really miss a beat.
I mean, the other ones, the Packers look great.
Yes.
They looked
phenomenal.
They were awesome. I do want to see a little bit more out of the receivers.
Yes.
I think Matthew Golden was not the debut he wanted, but he'll get there for sure. I mean, that type of speed,
yes,
that type of player, he'll get there. Don't worry. The Eagles at one.
There's no other team you can really put at one. And I don't think they had a convincing week 1 win.
No.
I expected it to be more convincing, but they just have a team and a quarterback in particular who's going to win you games.
It's as simple as that.
And it's funny with Jalen Hurts. I don't think he played overly well, but he he played clean. And that's what I've just become accustomed to with him. He may only throw for 140 yards passing. He may only run for 35 yards. But he'll throw in a rushing touchdown, and he's not going to make mistakes with the football.
He keeps that offense functional. I think functional is the best word for it. And I don't mean that in just like a baseline, like, okay, it happens. But he keeps them on time. He keeps them on script. He keeps them on schedule.
I know that the term is viewed so negatively, but he manages the game.
And he does it almost better than anyone else in the league.
He really does. He really does.
Like, I don't see
He's not going to light up the box score every single Sunday, but you know what? You're more often than not going to see Eagles with more points than their opponent. And that's kind of what we ask a quarterback to do.
With the team that they have, I don't think I want to see him having to light up the box score.
Right.
Because if he has to light up the box score, something else went wrong.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Like, if you have to rely on his arm, that means Saquon Barkley has been shut down or is hurt. And it's not their offense does not run at peak efficiency when he has to air the ball out 40 times. Pretty simple.
Correct.
I think they almost try to limit him to under 30 passes because once he exceeds 30 passes, they lose more ball games. I'd have to go get the exact statistics, but I'm pretty sure that's something that they have paid attention to analytically.
Anecdotally, 100% agree.
Yep. All right, now, football is here. And just as always here in the South, we are excited.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.